I have never met a cat this interested in, you know.
Me neither, and I've always had cats.
Like, really, like, ooh, what does poop do? Go in the hole.
He just likes watching stuff disappear down the toilet. Are we recording this?
Yeah, we are. But that, what, that's a great way to open. Speaking of people who are into poop.
Is that related to Metter, the
motor,
that
no, yeah, well,
about?
Motorcycle gangs are often, you know. This is top-notch nonsense. I know, I mean, you know, motorcycle, I mean, all right, that's not, everyone poops, so it's not really a motorcycle gang problem. I mean, we didn't see anybody poop in the, throughout the, anyway, our trio of movies today are from a, why don't you, you're the one who introduced me to this wonderful trilogy of, you know,
yeah,
movies and stuff
so
like that.
So it was an anthology series called Rebel Highway that aired on Showtime. Monthly, I think, in 1994.
Not a weekly. There's like 10 of them, and it was over a course of a...
Oh, was it weekly? Okay.
Yeah.
So it was an anthology series on that aired on Showtime weekly
yes.
in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a youngin' at the time. And you know I've always been really into like 50s and 60s stuff. So
still
I was
are.
All about... Yeah, I still am. So I was all about it.
Yeah. It's, I thoroughly enjoyed these. I had no idea that anybody that I'd never heard of this even when I was 9 and 10. I didn't fucking it was really eye-opening. I guess we'll start with Motorcycle Gang with Jake Busey and Carla Gugino.
Yeah, that's kind of the cool thing about these is they do they star some actors and actresses that often became pretty big, but
pretty,
this was
fairly big. Yeah,
yeah, but this was, you know, around the beginning of their career, so it was just kind of fun to see, yeah, Carla Gugino at 23, Jake Busey at, like, 25.
Yeah, just a very fresh face, very, and for the life, yeah, the freaking, the Gerald McRaney playing the old father. This movie is, directed by John Milius, and it came during a very strange time in his career. He's known as the conservative out of the brat pack of the 1970s filmmakers. He came up with De Palma, he came up with Scorsese, he came up with Spielberg, he came up with that he was part of the crew, but he was always more or less the big alpha male tough guy of that whole group. When you think of that whole group, even including Coppola, yeah, John Milius was very much the I got something to prove with my big, I'm gonna tell everybody this is what manliness is. And that's what a whole bunch of his movies are. And just like the epitome of a certain type of conservative manliness of like overcoming it and, you know, beating someone to the pulp and, you know, really feeling righteous about it. You know, that whole vibe was very much Milius's whole, yeah, that was whole Milius's whole idea, his whole vibe. What every time you watch a Milius picture, it feels very much like, oh my, I mean, he wrote the first fucking Conan movie, so
oh my
it's,
gosh, okay,
and from 1982.
There we go.
I mean, he's a fucking wild man. He's a very he's gotten more crazy as he came in, but yeah, he was part of the USC clan of people that came out during that set. The 70s period, but
yeah, so according to Wikipedia, it says, as with other films in the series, its name is taken from a 1950s B movie.
Yeah.
But its plot bears no resemblance to that film.
No, I okay.
And yeah, when asked why he chose to remake Motorcycle Gang, Milius said, "Why not? I never saw it. I just took a story that was kind of endemic to the period. What happened in those movies is they always had a family crossing the desert, and the family is beset by giant ants, cannibals, or a hot rod or motorcycle gang. So in this one, I have a dysfunctional family beset by a motorcycle gang." Nothing to do with the 1957 film.
Okay, well, fine. That's, well, we do, they are very, the characters are fairly well put together. I mean, they're fairly well defined, and they're fairly feel like some of them, it, as all these movies, they feel like some stereotypes of the 19 because they're remaking them, but
yeah, totally.
It's interesting just to see how much of it worked in the 90s, how much it really pulled off. I mean, you know, the, you know, just driving through the fucking over the border to try and find your daughter. So first of all, these guys are just they're together as a family. There's this the father who isn't into. Doesn't seem to be into his wife at all or interested.
Well, the wife is a drunk and she's cheating on with Jerry, who I think is the husband's friend, and he gives her that tacky Zippo with the two bedazzled J's on it. Ugly as shit.
Really fucking awful. I wrote that down. Tacky lighter. Saying goodbye, and then she says goodbye to Jerry. Oh, goodbye. I need that bye bunny. It's like, oh god. Just okay, so because they're moving across to
Houston to L.A.
From Houston to L.A. Quite the congratulations.
Yeah, we don't know why. They never tell us why.
Yeah, they don't.
We have to assume it's for Dad's work because that's the only reason people moved in the 50s.
Yeah, and it's going to be much better in California. It certainly will. I don't know if you all right or if you believe that. So eventually, the daughter is also has a best friend. She doesn't want to leave Houston. She's happy there. Carla looks nice.
Oh yeah, she looks great. She's super cute. And I love that, you know, as a parting gift, you know, she says, "Oh, I can't take this." No, you have to take it for good luck. It's a Fabian button.
Yeah. Fabian. I put an exclamation mark. Fabian. And it really reminded me of of all the things. It reminded me of Fabio of all the things. Just very
well, I think that's because of the name.
From the name, yes, of course. I'm very smart. But the great thing was, you know.
And it turns out to be Chekhov's Fabian pin.
Yeah. Which, you know.
Later in the movie.
This being John Milius, and it's not going to do anything really stupid. Anyway, so. No one likes moving, but they're on their way. They go on their way, and
they said it's supposed to take 3 days. Which, when I Google mapped it, it said it was supposed to take something more like 28 hours. So I was just kind of wondering what the highway system was like.
Yeah, during
the late '50s.
The late '50s must
have wasn't as intricate as it is now.
Yeah, and it, not as many because it just there's fewer ways to get from Texas to California, and especially Houston probably wasn't the big fucking massive city it is now, or
even LA wasn't the massive city it is now.
Yeah, just I think LA was fairly small time, so they're going from Houston. Yeah, so anyway, but the mom really is an alcohol. She really does like to drink quite a bit. It doesn't seem like she's happy at all.
They stop for food a couple of times, she wants to have a few cocktails and dance, but Dad's not into it. He's kind of a fuddy-duddy.
I don't like this. If I had a lady who wanted to dance, hint, hint, I would go and dance with her. I don't know why you wouldn't want to have fun with your... whatever.
He just wants to, he's been driving. You know what it's like to drive for hours upon hours upon hours. Mm-hmm. He's just beat and he just wants to get to his destination.
So throughout this whole thing, the motorcyclists are following them because...
They see them at one of the restaurants.
Yeah.
And they really, Jake Busey kind of hones in on Carla Gugino's character. Like,
he says, ooh,
she's
young.
Fresh and full of light. Ugh. And it's like, ew,
ugh,
gross.
God. That's
and
a
he's an utter tool. Entire gang is.
Yes.
They're just assholes.
They're really the fucking most rough, ugly, realistically fucking awful douchebags.
Well, I don't know how realistic they are.
Well, no, hyper masculine evil is what. Again, what Milius is known for is that hyper-masculine type of, I can see the visceral evil in a man's eyes when he goes vroom vroom on his sickle. On his cycle.
On his sickle.
On his motorcycle.
Yeah.
On the motorcycles.
Yeah.
As the Zodiac once wrote down. Motorcycles.
And we do get a little bit of character development, at least with the family.
Yeah.
You know, mom's a drunk, dad's a fuddy-duddy. When mom is gone, the dad and the daughter are talking, and he's talking about how, you know, it's going to be a fresh start and everything's going to be so much better in California. And the daughter character says, I just hope she doesn't put things in my room. She always puts things in my room. It makes me feel like a little girl. And he says, she just doesn't want you growing up too fast because it makes her feel old. And she's like, yeah.
Well, you're not supposed to understand your parent. You know, it's... And It's just, yeah, she doesn't want him, want her growing up. She doesn't want her being her own person, you know, her being a child.
I think the wife just doesn't want to... Yeah, she just wants to still have a good time, and dad's just, you know...
And we kind of, from a little bit, might think that a dad might not have what it takes. He seems more silent, but he doesn't seem all that dead. He just lets things roll off his back throughout, like, a good portion of the movie, so when he turns, it's...
Well, they were called the Silent Generation, babe, like he fought in Korea.
Yeah, and he didn't really want to talk about it or brag about it.
Strong but silent type kind of was the thing at the time.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just surprised, so... The motorcycle, so Jake Busey, who's leading this motorcycle gang, is really, he's into Jack Kerouac, of course.
Oh, yeah, so he says, because as per usual,
because I want to, you know about Jack Kerouac, like,
on this, the nose.
It's fucking awful. Sweet talking with Jack Kerouac in mind.
And they have some beef with some lawyer. We just cut to this random scene.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're threatening this lawyer. He's apparently, supposed to get him off on some drug charge. Apparently, yeah. They were either caught with, they either sell or do smack heroin.
And the lawyer is somehow complicit in this.
The dirty lawyer, yeah.
And just is like, I just need to get away. And then the lawyer does not get away.
No, he's like, here, take the money. And he throws all the money at him, but they shoot him anyway.
Which just goes to show you don't trust a motorcycle gang in the 1950s,
no.
Late 1950s. That it was a pretty intense kill. Much more hyper scary than other kind of random murders I've seen before, or like in movies and shit like that. Anyway,
I was gonna say, you've seen a random murder?
No, not yet. I don't know what. There's no fucking watch on me. Anyway, so they need to, they're at a hotel, right? They're at the motor court room eventually.
So they stop at a motel and the wife is, she's drunk and too tired to bang. And then we cut to Carla Gugino, who's hearing,
Somebody else bang.
Yeah, a couple banging. We think it's in the next room, but it's
first thought it was the parents, and she would have done that, but then I guess not. It was just another freaking couple altogether.
No, it was
Jake
Busey with that waitress.
Yeah, that's why.
In a car, and he apparently OD'd her for no good reason. He's like, ooh, I'm going to make you feel real good. I'm going to shoot you up. And it's just like, ew, gross.
That's just, it's really rough. It's really kind of.
Yeah, it's very dirty.
That's what I thought. That's why I thought it was so, that's why I think this gang is really insidious, after raping, just put a fucking needle
filled with
poison.
Well, I think the chick
poison.
Was into it, so I don't know. Like,
yeah, okay, so, let's, let's, maybe she was into it, but, she was also on heroin, so see how much she can be into it, or afterwards.
Yeah, so basically it's just he's a dirtbag, that's all.
He's a dirtbag, and she was kind of into it, and then they had sex, and then he filled her full of heroin, which is probably
what
That's not a
There is an interesting...
Don't do that after sex.
Oh, no, hey, I would not recommend that.
I feel like you feel a jizz, now here's some brown stuff in your fucking arm. Ugh,
oh,
God.
Gross.
Some brown heroin. That's what the... Ugh. Anyway.
And there's an interesting exchange between the father character and the Asian motel owner, who notices the military tattoo on his hand and notices that he was in the same battalion as his son who died in the war.
Yeah.
And the dad's like, I'm real sorry. I don't remember him. I wish I did. So he ends up not getting charged for the room. I just thought that was kind of an interesting exchange. I'm not sure why it was there. I guess just to a little bit of to show humility with the father character.
Yeah,
just that people were still being a little bit affected by the war a few years later.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Since it's still kind of considered the forgotten war. I mean,
yeah, Milius is very much a war-like guy. He's a very veterans. He sticks up for veteran stuff. He's very much into taking care of and making sure our veterans are looked at as heroes rather than like murderers or whatever.
What's drinking,
babe? Yeah. Anyway. Oh, I am drinking. I believe this is diluted whiskey, as well as some, I believe some Sprite and some cherry seltzer, and I think there's some other type of whiskey other than Japanese whiskey. I think it's, there's a little bit more banana whiskey in here. And this is what I like to drink when I record. I like to drink suicide stuff that is diluted down so it's easy to fucking go down. Delicious. Let's move on. But the other thing I wanted to mention, I wrote this down, and Jake Busey says this line. It's really disturbing, and I passed it a little bit, but he said, he's thinking about Carla Gugino, that pure white love I can give her. That kind of icky type of stuff.
Yeah.
Because the other gang members are like, what about her? Why are we, you know, following? Why do we want to follow this family? You ever see the I want to give this woman, that girl, some pure white love. And just, ugh. Anyway. But, long time ago. Yeah, war talk. Long time ago, I danced well. Joy has been beat out of me, it feels like, for that fucking father figure. Anyway. Motorcycle gang, it gets ready to fuck up the gas station guy and then get the cash. That was fucking awful. They're really... Milius is really laying on thick how awful this motorcycle gang is. So
yeah, they rob the gas station. They feed the poor baby chicks to the snake.
That was rough. That was rough for
that
you
was
to
completely
watch.
Completely unnecessary.
Where one of the guys said, "Oh, I'll just dump this in here."
It's fucking terrible. But yeah, the motorcycle gang beat them to the gas station because then the family shows up at the gas station.
And they steal all his beer and whiskey and cut the phone line and everything.
Oh yeah, they cut the phone line. Like, what the
so
hell,
he
dude?
Can't fucking call for any sort of help, and so he's helpless out there.
Well, a cop still shows up because they're on the case.
Yeah. And Jake is, there's my angel, hunting Carla in that car. Ooh, there she is. It's just
it's super
rough.
Creepy.
It's very
creepy
shit, man.
I like the part
when
they get to the next motel that's run by the Beatnik couple.
Oh, yeah. A real Beatnik. Yeah, that was nice.
Wonderful. Yeah, they said they were Beatniks, and the husband, the guy, well, they're not, they actually specifically say they're not married because they're Beatniks. You don't have to be married. They go
Cisco.
Against convention.
His name was Cisco.
And he's a photographer, and he's like super into the mom.
And super into the mom, and wanting both of the mom and the daughter to, you know, show some, you know, skin stuff.
Yeah,
or,
to
take skin.
Pictures. At first, I'm like, what are they? Some kind of a weird pornographer?
Yeah, I was.
To do some gnarly stuff.
No, but they were just like, ooh, we do art. When you look pretty nice.
Yeah, and then when we find the mom's actually taking photos and Carl
having
goes out
time.
To get the mom a burger. And what I found interesting was the dad was totally fine with it.
Yeah, but he didn't want to enjoy it for a while. But when he finally
When they were doing it though, when they were taking the photos, he's like, "Okay, go ahead. You're my 16-year-old daughter. You want the weird beatnik couple to take photos of you? All right, just take your mom a burger. Go ahead. It's fine." Like he's not protective or thinking anything weird's going to happen. He's like fine with, maybe he just got good vibes from the beatniks. But then when they are taking the photos, it's a little risque, but it's nothing scandalous or predatory or anything like that. They're just kind of having some drinks, taking photos, having a good time.
Well, eventually, even though he does seem like a bit of a party pooper, he does let all that stuff happen. Not let, but whatever. He's okay with his wife and daughter doing that stuff. Jake eventually, and his name is Jake in the movie,
yes,
so it must have been really, really, yeah, exactly. So it really makes sense. But Jake fucks with the car, cuts with the car, and makes it, you know, does what might have happened to your car recently.
Oh,
but
my
yeah,
gosh,
that's awful. Yeah, but
it overheats.
And I remember them saying Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, yes.
Anyway.
And then in the car when they're on their way right before it overheats, they do bring out the photos. And they're actually, they're nice photos. But then the dad's
artful,
like, no, is that what you want people to think of you? And it's like, dude, what did you
calm
think they
down.
Were doing in there? It could have been so much worse.
Also, calm down. It's just fucking taking pictures, dumbass. This is not...
And they were like artistic. It was black and white.
Yeah, it was
and
fine.
White, and
everyone's
like
to calm the fuck
the
down.
The photographer wasn't a creep or anything. They
no.
were just kind of crunchy.
Just, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I really did like the lady of the... I like that entire couple.
Yeah, that
nice.
Couple,
anyway.
They just seem happy.
It was a nice part.
They chill and hang out. And yeah, when the car overheats and the dad has to walk back to get some water, he goes back to that hotel. And the, you know, the beatnik hotel owner, he fills up a bunch of jugs of water and takes him in his own little hot rod. And he's like, here, let me help you out.
And meanwhile, the daughter and mother have a nice little heart to heart about the father and about communication and about like being
well, hanging
best
their feet out the windows.
Yeah, exactly.
But yes, you're right.
It's a nice little thing just for Tarantino. But
and I think this is around when we find out via the cops that the waitress that was banging Jake Busey at the first motel, like, died. She straight up OD'd from what he gave her. It's like, why did you unalive her? What is the purpose of that?
It's fucking horrifying. So, and then while they're on their way, I love the beatnik is talking about society, man. Is evil. Yeah. It's terrible. It's just, you know, all these terrible, horrible things all happen. That's why I'm out here just taking pictures with my wife.
Yeah, on the ride back to the overheated car.
Overheated car.
Like,
okay.
You see how things are, man.
They are. They are this way. And you just gotta, you know, deal with them, you know. Just get away and, you know, just say, hey, this is not cool. I don't want to be around that, man. Anyway, so they finally get, finally get to the fucking place. Oh, yeah.
No, the motorcycle gang shows up.
Yeah, and this is a wonderful, insane set piece, action set piece that happens here.
Yeah, the scene is crazy. You know, they say to the mom, like, I'm not gonna hurt you, I'm just gonna fuck with you a little bit. Yeah. Ah, I don't want that.
Yeah, I wrote that down. Use my tool to... I remember that. That was awful, but I like that phrase. Use my tool, tool, and then he... Anyway. But,
yeah, he takes off like a... one of the, like a pry bar, whatever you call them things, you know, some kind of piece off his bike to break the window to try and get to the ladies.
Yeah.
And Jake Busey steals Carla Gugino and is like, ah, this gang is gonna do bad stuff. I better take you and save you.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, fuck. Weren't you with them? Aren't
yeah,
you there?
They're,
obviously
you're,
they're
you fucking lying, gaslighting piece of shit. No. You're, it really feels like local realistic terrorism, like terrorism of an
yes.
entire family. And it just the insane fucking crash that happens, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, when they get to
oh,
the spot.
they fuck up the guy's hot rod, I think, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And then
Jake Busey is saying, like, ah, we'll have to go down to Mexico to get away from these guys. And she's not, like, super freaked out about this. It's like some rando motorcycle dude who was clearly with these bad guys is gonna just put me on his bike and take me down to freaking Mexico?
That didn't really work, because I thought, what is your plan? I mean, I guess you're into the bad boys, but not when they fucking pick you up like that. I mean, goddamn.
Yeah,
she
didn't seem super freaked out. I would be super freaked out.
They're like a wolves in a pack, just like coming after, anyway. But, the dad's gonna eventually come after her. She's calming the fucking, her wife down, saying, breathe, you can calm down, we're going to find her. Oh, God. Anyway, so they get, so I think they take her to Carla, say we're gonna go to Mexico, which
yeah,
is...
Yeah, they go to Mexico, they go to see Mr. Gortman, who's his dealer.
Yeah, which, so he is just he's just a drug dealer.
They're like, yeah, we want to buy some heroin, did they say they wanted to buy meth? I didn't think meth was a thing at the time. Would they say speed?
Speed.
Something
which is,
like that,
yeah.
I think that was... The bikers were really into into crank,
but
at the time.
But he's apparently he's a supplier. He's talking to he's trying to talk to this Mexican supplier about getting a bunch of heroin that he can sell for them, and he thinks it's a good idea. But they don't want the fucking suppliers don't want anything to do with what is going on, and they also ask about Carla Gugino.
Like,
what
the
fuck is happening?
Like
here,
she looks
dude?
Too young for you. But then the other dude, his secondhand man, says, no, give her to Gortman. Gortman wants her. It's like, dude,
what
the hell?
Fuck? And then he's like, I'm not giving you to
We're doing some
ladies.
Human trafficking now?
It's just really... just get...
But he doesn't give her to Gortman. He takes her back to some shithole little shack.
Stick with me. Trust me. I'm Jake Busey. Anyway, I guess it's easy to get through the border back and forth in the
1950s. Back then,
yeah,
I think
in the 50s and late 50s, early 60s. You know,
no
just
checkpoints or anything. So, yeah, they're back at the shack. It's where he pulls up...
They call him a cockroach, anyway.
Yeah, yeah, they did call him... They called him a cockroach a few times. It's where he sets up a chair, gestures for Carla to sit in the chair, and then he lies down on this, like, shitty little mat, and then he gestures for her to get on the mat with him, and it's like, well, do you want her to sit in the chair, or you want her to get on the mat? He wants her to get on the mat. So she just does. Like, I would be so wary of this entire scenario, but she does, and she just kind of cuddles with him, and they kind of start making out, and she seems, like, okay with it, which is kind of gnarly.
Yeah, at first, and it gets... And then it starts to feel... You think she might be into it a little bit at the very beginning, and then it starts to get a little...
Well, and then he starts, like, full-on...
Getting a little rapey.
Yeah, then it gets super rapey, and she's just, like, very clearly not into it, and saying no, and not wanting to be a part of this at all. So she grabs her, trusty Fabian button, manages to, which she wears on every single top she wears in the entire
movie. Yeah, that's the insane, well, that's great, because it's showing, hey, okay, this is going to be a Chekhov, yeah, it's Chekhov's button, that's nice, it's nice.
Yes, anyway. Dave, that's
okay,
what
I'm sorry,
that.
Yeah, alright, I didn't really get, no,
so while he's, like, trying to rape her, she gets it off of her jacket, opens it, and, like, stabs him in the face or the neck or something, and gets him off her, and tries to escape the shack.
Tries.
She can't. But by that time, Dad somehow found Gortman, somehow found out where they knew, I guess it makes sense that he figured, I think the cops told him they were going into Mexico, so that, because he went to the cops, and they're like, there's nothing we can do. They're across the border.
This is a John Milius movie. You gotta do some vigilantism on your own, sir.
It's like, well, we'll be waiting for him on the other side, but while they're over there, we can't do anything.
Oh, well.
So he knows they're in Mexico, and I guess there's probably a very particular crossing into Mexico, so he had an idea of the area where they were.
Yeah.
But I don't know how they found this Gortman character, and how he got the information, and how he found the shack where they
Everyone knows Gortman,
yeah,
the heroin supplier in Mexico, which is insane. But okay. Anyway, so he knows Spanish. He knows Spanish. That is it. That's impressive too. Of course, whatever. But yeah, that's nice. And then after all this, there's the heroin part. Their heroin party where it's just them.
Oh yeah.
And it's afterwards.
Oh yeah. The gang shows up to the shack first. They're pissed off at Jake, and they start shooting up the shack. And then they have tied Carla up to the chair, and they're gonna shoot her up, and then one of the gang members says, like, ugh, I want that clean white thing, I never had a virgin before. And then Jake has the utter gall to say, she ain't no virgin, she practically raped me.
That is...
lying sack of shit. Like, you're all just disgusting and fucking terrible, and leave this little girl alone.
That's it. They really lay it on, Milius really lays it on thick, how
very
horrible
thick.
This is, so when the dad gets here, you're fine with them being murdered, you're okay, and you feel righteous about them being murdered, because they're so awful, which they are.
Yeah, the dad shows up and just wails on the entire gang, one at a time. Just,
beat it, Crab.
Beat it, Crab. One of them's name is Crab.
Now his death is at the hands of Dad, is what I wrote down.
No, it wasn't. He beats on all the gang, because they're all a bunch of little bitches when they're one-on-one, and he's, a vet, and he's not taking no shit, because they have his little girl, and before he went in, he tells the wife, gives her this big old butcher knife, and says, wait outside. So, Jake, being the little bitch he is, like, pounding on the door, trying to get out of the shack, because I think it's on fire now.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get out of the shack, and once he finally gets the door open and leaves the shack, he runs right into the wife's knife.
Yeah. And
he
there's
ran
another,
into my
it,
knife.
It's great. There's a guy named Roadhog in this movie.
Roadhog was the other one. Roadhog and Crab and Jake.
And, there's a stab in the chest and in the knee of these people. There's some real fucking scary, Jake gets stabbed in the gut by Mom. They light the barn on fire.
Oh, that's when it's lit on fire. Yeah, they light it on fire.
And then they leave. And back. And then that would have been an okay time to
end
the movie.
To end it, yes.
But then, okay, back at the border. But since this is Milius, he's got to put a little fucking thing where, the white vigilante man going after the evil Michael Psycho guy. He's going to get away with it. The police didn't do anything. The police are okay with you being a vigilante.
Uh-huh.
That's the base. Remember, because he goes, like, back to the border, they get questioned. And there's that eye of knowing, like, we were only in there for a day. And they're like, okay, sir, I believe you.
And he's like,
You're very serious.
There's a very dangerous motorcycle gang. And he's like, nope, didn't see anyone like that.
Nope.
And he's like, well, you're lucky then.
You're lucky then. Goodbye, very wonderful law-abiding citizen. There are things that you do not need to know, but now you do. Now you do know these things that are terrible in the life of being with a motorcycle gang.
Fucking, anyway.
Anyway, so...
So what'd you think about that movie, babe?
I really enjoyed it. That was underrated Milius. I really didn't know how he was going to... He really made it his own.
Yeah, Wikipedia, according to Wikipedia, he says it's one of his favorites.
That makes sense. I mean, that makes sense. Okay, so just so you know, these are the movies that came out in August. Oh shit! In August of
this year.
Yes, I know.
In August of 1994 of this of that particular year.
Emmanuel in Space 3.
Shit.
A Lesson in Love. XX Beautiful Hunter, Clear and Present Danger, The Little Rascals, Airheads, Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, Munchie Strikes Back, Untamed Love, Cartoons of Street Fighter II, Cinderella, Plastic Little. Oh! Also came out this month, 2 days afterward, The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, came out this freaking month.
I love that movie.
As well as Don't Talk to Strangers with Pierce Brosnan, Royal Deceit with, Karina
with Whoopi Goldberg and Ray Liotta, The Next Karate Kid, Green Day Live, Woodstock 94.
Oh, shit.
And, Color of Night. Remember Color of Night? God. Fucking Blank Man. a movie called Seduce Me, Pamela Principal 2. Killing Zoe also came out this month. And, And, of course, Natural Born Killers came out this month. And, of course, Wagon West with John Candy and...
That's Wagons East, babe.
No, it's Wagons East. Wagons East, I'm smart at reading. I'm smart at reading. It's Pat also came out this month.
Oh, my gosh.
As well as one of my childhood favorites, Camp Nowhere.
And I know why it's one of your favorites.
Why?
I won't say it.
Okay. Whatever. I was young. I don't care. Let's move on. Milk Money. Anyway. And Red Sun Rising. Okay. Well, that certainly was something.
Something to cut out.
Something to cut out. Anyway. The, wonderful thing. Let's get into Drag Strip Girl.
Yeah, another insane movie that was named after a movie from the 50s, but the plot has nothing to, you know, it's not a remake of any kind. They just took the name.
And it has Tuco! It has Tuco!
Tuco Salamanca is in this, yes!
This is awesome. And he's playing against what might be his type or whatever.
Yeah, he's sort of playing, he's playing kind of the level-headed friend. I mean, he's still technically a criminal, but he's the one that's like, dude, chill the fuck out. Don't get too big for your britches.
Here is the plot, according to Wikipedia. Johnny is a bad guy trying to go straight. He becomes smitten with Laura, a wealthy, good girl, rebelling against her parents by pretending to go steady with him. This film is set against the backdrop of 1950s Los Angeles. That's right!
Again, kind of thin on plot.
And no actual names other than Tuco, honestly.
No.
I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah, Natasha Gregson Wagner's in this.
Wagner, yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot. Yeah, Natalie Wood's daughter is in this.
Yes, being a drag strip girl just like her mother was many years ago in Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah, and so...
And that, the guy who plays Johnny Mark Dacascos...
Dacascos.
He actually works. I haven't seen a lot that he's been in, but he works a lot. Very handsome. And Tracy Lords is in this babe.
Yeah, she is. And
no
she's playing
names.
No, not name. All right. Names for us. You're right. I meant in general. One of the producers on this is Deborah Hill, who has worked with Carpenter for many years. And has done plenty of other wonderful stuff. Anyway, it's a fun, it doesn't really have a lot. It's just a little bit of like, ooh my gosh, this feels more like an after school special than anything else.
Yeah, it kind of does. It's mainly a romance.
Of like, ooh, hello, ooh, I shouldn't be dating the handsome guy who's so handsome and cool and wants to hang out with me. I'm going to do it so my dad is frowning. Well, you know,
I think she is into him.
Yeah,
though.
She is into him. The first thing I wrote down was Cinderella wants her to bird. Oh my god.
What?
I don't know. And I also wrote down dimes because they were saying, ooh, it's a dime. Anyway. But, and the third thing I wrote down, it's very accentuated when it comes to its 1950s costumes. Major L on the Letterman jacket, as in loser.
Oh, yeah. When, anyway. That happens later when the ex-boyfriend and his pal who play football trying to rough Johnny up, they're wearing Letterman jackets, but the L letters are gigantic. Yeah. I've never seen them quite so big.
I think it's subtext. As in they're losers. All right. But there's
a lot of class in this. There's some race in this.
There's some interesting things that they're dealing with.
Kinds of race, actually.
Yeah, two different kinds of races. And anyway, the movie also has more forced kissing in a car by a man overpowering a girl again. It's just where it feels like she is not really enjoying this all as much, but she's going with it because it's, you know, the 1950s.
Yeah, I think that was kind of a staple of the exploitation movies of the 50s and early 60s.
So they are more or less, so these valets, the main guy, Johnny, is a valet who is, I think like scamming, you know, the car early.
Well, what he seems to do is, he like makes copies of the keys.
Yeah.
And then he steals the cars later and takes them to a chop shop.
And for them to take out stuff or whatever.
To sell parts.
Sell parts, which is horrific.
And I love Natasha's very 90s eyebrows in this 50s set movie. She has kind of the pre-2000s sperm brows going on.
Yeah, that's... I like those, too. So they're stealing cars and bringing them to the chop shop. And there's, like, you drive like a white girl. All these fucking things where... I don't know how white girls drive, but okay.
Oh, I know how I drive. Not good.
Yeah. Anyway, they have coppers coming after them. They, you know, have to get away from the cops. Yet again, because they're being chased by them because they're stealing fucking cars.
Well, yeah, okay, but let's start a little earlier. Yeah. Natasha's with her, you know, very 1950s football playing prep boyfriend, making out in the car. She's not into it. She's just clearly bored with his ass in general. Johnny parks their car, and he stole her diary. Because he's like, ooh, she's pretty, and what's this? I'm going to steal her diary. But the thing is, he should not have done that, yes.
And also, don't.
Yeah, who leaves their diary in their car? That's weird. Unless she's really trying to make it so her parents don't read it.
Yeah.
Or she likes to write in the car when she's parked or something. Other than that,
I wouldn't put my diary in my car. What the fuck? Okay, I wouldn't have it in my car.
But the funny thing is, he doesn't even read it. He gives it to his little brother who reads it.
Yeah. And that's even more insane. I mean, that's even more insane. Here, read this.
Girl's... Yeah, I found this for you. You like books.
You like books. You like reading. I am Johnny. I don't like
to
read.
You're in a wheelchair. You must like books. Weird and ableist. So Johnny, who I guess is supposed to be 16, 17. Of course, he looks 25, 26. He and his younger brother, who's probably, I don't know, 13, 14-ish, they live with their foster mother, Tracy Lords, in this very gnarly Marilyn Monroe costume wig.
Oh my God, it didn't even look like her at the very beginning. I really thought it was somebody else, and I was like, that's Tracy,
her.
Okay.
I guess she is both their foster mother and a lady of the evening.
Yes,
they live
a
with
sex
her.
Worker.
Yeah, they live with her, and they watch her bang John
Which is not
in
cool,
a hole
dude.
In the wall between the bedroom and the living room, or her bedroom, I guess.
Whatever, but all right. I wouldn't be spying on my foster mom, but if I was in that situation.
Oh yeah, and I like how Johnny's saying that, you know, he's stealing these cars, taking them to the chop shop because he wants to save up to get his own mechanic shop because he wants to be able to put his little brother through college since he likes books and everything. And I love how Tracy Lord says, but he don't even speak good English. Well, neither do you, honey. You shouldn't be saying anything. Let the dude have a dream.
Let the dude have a dream. Alrighty, but I think that goes for most things. Let the dude have a dream. Johnny's little brother is also working on his own fucking little engine there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's also something of a junior mechanic who's good
Who
with
wants
machines.
To be a lot like his brother, which is sad. But, The woman's name is Tracy Lord's name, I believe, is Blanche, right? Am I getting that wrong? Yeah.
Yes, I believe so.
And you're gonna take him to a school for cripples? I don't.
Oh
fucking,
yeah,
that,
ew,
that wasn't great.
I think I.
Oh no. But good English. She ain't got legs like you do. These fucking things,
dude. The stuff you could get away with saying in the 90s.
Yeah. Or in the 50s. You know, Mr. Big for your britches. I'm just reading all these fucking things down. He realizes from his friend that it's probably not a good idea. Oh, this, I'm going way too forward. Never mind.
Tuco. His character's name is Doogie.
Tuco knows what he, but Doogie knows what's going on.
Yeah, he really does. He sees what's going on. And, you know, so Johnny has this major crush on Natasha Wagner's character, Laura.
Yeah.
And, you know, Laura? And he says to him, you know, you're not a member of her country club. Admit that's what you want, but don't fuck us to get that. Because he is getting a little big for his britches. He's trying to steal more cars, steal them too fast. You know, they have a whole operation running with the owner of the chop shop and whatnot, whose, I guess, daughter is really into Johnny, and they had a thing, but they're getting...
But that's not there anymore, and she confronts him eventually, but
yeah,
we'll get to that.
But so Johnny, he takes one of the nice cars.
Still in that red-hot convertible.
Yeah,
gorgeous.
After he takes it to the chop shop, but before they can start working on it, he's like, nah, I still have the keys, I'm gonna take this. And the chop shop owner's like, dude, you're gonna get freaking popped. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You can't just go out driving it.
Yeah, this is fucking silly.
But he takes it to pick up Natasha at her, you know, fancy private Catholic school.
The fucking confidence to do that type of stuff and be okay and, like, not worry that you're gonna, yeah, that Tuco's gonna telling you, hey, this is gonna, you want to hang out with rich and white late pretty girls? It's not gonna fly for them. It's not gonna go well for you. I don't know why you're doing this fucking evil shit when they're just not, she's not gonna, Tuco doesn't think she's gonna fall in love with them or think it might be a scam. Anyway, so, white parents are not going to be aren't going to be happier going to date this fucking dude. But
yeah,
okay.
So after, you know, he takes Laura out, Laura who is Natasha. I will probably be just saying both names this entire time.
Yeah.
He takes her out, they have a nice time, and then he takes the car back to the chop shop, and that's where Pearl, the chop shop's daughter, is waiting for him, saying, "You can't leave this here. It's hot." meaning two different things.
Vagina.
So she starts, you know, taking her clothes off and whatnot. You know, it's basically like, oh, I have no socially imposed expectations on me, and therefore I can give it up. So pick me. I mean, yeah, I'm wearing white ankle socks, white granny panties, and a black bra under my pink sweater.
Let's fuck.
Yeah.
It's hard to make some love, I guess. But all right. And
everyone keeps saying, you know, oh, she's rich and you're Mexican. You can't be together. Very, very 50s. You know, in L.A., I guess that was probably a thing. It's depressing.
Yeah. It's still a thing among certain circles. Anyway, but... I have some weird writing notes here, but eventually they get into a drag race, don't they?
That happens later. Like, Johnny doesn't bang Pearl because he starts to make out with her, but then he stops. He's kind of just like, well, someone above my station is paying attention to me, and it makes me feel important and believe in myself.
He's not going to have sex with this girl who actually likes you, who actually wants to be with you, rather than someone that might be, you know, this might be a fling for her or whatever the fuck, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we don't get any indication of that from Laura, though. She does seem to like Johnny.
Yeah.
Then we cut to a scene where Tracy's banging some John who likes to do dirty talk about his roofing business.
That's fucking hilarious. Through the wall.
He's like, yeah, now I got 13 guys under me and it's my company. Oh, yeah, you like that. Please. Why don't you bang a roof then? What's going on?
Well, he'll get shingles that way. The if he doesn't do it with a condom. Let's move on.
And then later on, Natasha finds Johnny on some random road where he just happens to be driving by.
Yeah.
And I don't know how this happened. This is very coinky-dink. And they go for a ride, and he takes her up into the hills and teaches her how to shoot a gun. Because he just happens to have a gun, and she's like, ooh,
a gun. I've never touched this before.
This is naughty, yeah. Let's just randomly shoot off the Hollywood Hills. Hopefully it doesn't hit anybody.
Whatever goes up goes down.
I think they were shooting at a street sign or something.
Still, it's just, I wouldn't, ugh, God. I'm being a bad girl. What does bad girls do? Learn how to shoot guns.
Yeah, so she invites him to, I guess, some party at her folks' place. And she's, you know, getting dressed in, you know, her sexy black, you know, strapless bra. And she puts on a red slip and she's talking to her friend. And, you know, her friend is trying to convince her that, like, you should just go with Alex because, you know, he's your kind.
Yep.
And she's just...
Good old-fashioned racism.
Yeah, and classism. And she's just like, no, but Alex is a boy compared to him. And her friend says, well, I think he's a hood.
Hood. One of those hoods I hear about so much. Ugh, hood. But, yeah, she kind of storms out and kind of says, I don't care. I like him and I want to, you know, be with him and you don't understand and fuck you. And
yeah, she's basically saying like, yeah, your dad's never going to accept him. Like, why are you even trying? And she's like, no, my dad will totally accept him. I told him that he's your cousin. Yes.
Again, that's another thing you do not do to you're just telling me this now that you told me that I was...
And yes, this swarthy, multiracial, handsome man is the cousin of the whitest, fakest redhead I've ever seen in my life. All right, it
okay,
could happen.
Fine, whatever.
But once he... It's funny, because once he does go to Natasha's dad's house up in the hills, super fancy, they have their own bar, the first thing the dad says is like, hey, you got a hell of a tan there. Oh my gosh.
That was really rough to watch. God damn it.
Which is funny, because it's like, really, you've never seen a non-white person in LA? Come on, bro.
Yeah, who are you?
But then he lies and says, blah, blah, I work running my dad's roofing business.
Roofing business.
That he got from the John. It's like, well, I work on top of roof, so I get a tan. But then once Johnny walks away, the wife says, do you think he's Mexican? And the dad says, no, Mexicans don't look like that. What the fuck
are you talking about?
Tan,
also, that's bullshit.
Wearing a suit? Oh, because he stole that suit from the other John.
Yeah.
After they were, you know, he was naked in Tracy Lord's bed. He's like, I'm just going to go steal this guy's ill-fitting suit. So I have a suit to wear and don't know how to tie a tie. Which is just like, oh my God. And then, you know, the dad says, oh, well, he's Megan's cousin, for Christ's sake. And it's just like, oh, Lord, you bought that hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
That's
embarrassing,
oh my gosh.
Actually.
God. All right. Anyway, so.
And after that party, he's talking to Tuco at some point. Doogie. Why did they call him Doogie?
Of all the things.
I know. And he, you know, he's talking about how he's, you know, gonna get in trouble and he's gonna fuck everything up. And he says, "This is our business that don't hurt. That this is our business that don't hurt nobody and nobody. And you ruined it for some stupid white broad."
White
broad.
It's
like, okay,
wow.
Everybody's racist.
Everybody has prejudice. What a surprise!
All right.
Yeah. When does the drag race?
That happens later. Now they're all at this club. Tuco's dancing with Pearl. And they're about to sting Johnny with the cop that's been looking for him.
Oh, I do remember this. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's been looking for him, and they're like, oh, you know, people are like, oh, well, he works here. He parks cars. And then Tuco's just had enough of his shit, being like, okay, you know, I'm just gonna get him caught because that's the only thing that's gonna help not get the rest of us in trouble.
Yeah.
So Johnny and Laura, who were dancing, they go ahead and leave that party at whatever club they're at, and they break into a private school. For some reason, that's where they go. And he's like, I want to see your school. And she's like, well, it's locked. And he's like, well, come on, climb over. And she's wearing these really cute, like, red shorts. I thought she was in a skirt, but they're these really cute kind of short red shorts and, like, a striped kind of off-the-shoulder shirt. It was really cute. So I guess she was wearing flats, because you don't want to hop a fence in heels. So they go to her private school, they break in, and the first place they go is to the gym, and she talks about how she does gymnastics, and he's like, show me. So she does a couple cartwheels and whatnot on the high beam, and he's like, oh, can you teach me how to do that? And she's like, okay, keep leaning over. She's trying to teach him how to do a backbend, but, you know, he's smooth as fuck, so he falls on the mat, and she falls on top of him.
Yeah, oh no, oh my.
Jeez. Oh, and then they go down to the bomb shelter, which is just so interesting in 50s that the school has a bomb shelter, and it has these pre-recorded instructions of what to do. It's like, okay, you're in the bomb shelter now. Someone must have dropped a nuke. Here's what you have to do, and here's what you have to plan for. It's pre-recorded. It's super creepy. But, you know, it's the perfect place to bang, so they do.
Yeah.
So then after they have their fun in the bomb shelter, Johnny drops her back at her place.
Yeah.
You know, his dad liked him before, but now Alex, the football prep boyfriend, is there with his giant L jacket, you know, and they're going to rough him up for, you know, stealing his girl, that whole nonsense.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, they have to hash things out the way you did in 1950s Los Angeles with a drag race.
Yes. And it's not gonna go well. Oh my god. I put down 80s dickhead. No, he does, that boyfriend does seem very, very much of the 1980s. He has the hair, he has the face. It's really hard to picture him as a 1950s person. Anyway. But let me see here, where the fuck was the thing? So the drag race happens.
Well, okay, so there's some more stuff.
Yeah, there is some more stuff, sorry.
Tuco again is trying to talk some sense into Johnny, and he's like, well, you know, I got a race, because he thinks he's better than me, talking about Alex.
Yeah.
And Tuco's like, or is it Pearl who says this? I think it's actually Pearl.
It's Pearl.
She's trying to talk some sense into him. She's like, so you win, so you beat some kids, so you make some white girl's heart go pitter-patter. So fucking what? Like, yep, pretty much. She's not wrong. And he, you know, he can't use one of the, because he's being followed by the cops and stuff, he can't race in one of the cars that he stole, so he has to race in his souped-up Oldsmobile. It's like, okay, good fucking luck. You're gonna, you know, race a dragster in an Oldsmobile?
That, it didn't look good. It didn't feel like it was gonna go well, goddamn it, ow.
No, of course it's not going to go well. They never do.
They never do. I every single drag race I've ever watched on television or heard of in the newspaper is when it does not go well at all. My gosh. All right. So
where it, so it fucks up the fucking car.
Oh, well, once Laura sees him in the Oldsmobile, you know, she's like, well, why didn't you tell me the truth? And he's like, well, I can't. I'm from the wrong side of the tracks. Yeah, obvious Trota side. Yeah, bro, that's actually what she liked about you, so yeah. Why don't you just own up to it? She liked that you were different, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
And apparently his younger brother turned that old-ass Oldsmobile, aptly named, because it's fucking old, into some kind of speed demon.
That's souped the idea. Up and yeah, everything
that's,
like
that's
that.
That's apparently how it got souped up, is the younger brother did some stuff to it.
It made it really powerful.
So they have this kind of makeshift race area where the demarcations between the lines are, you know, big, like, kind of trash can things full of fire.
Fire.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That can't go wrong at all. But, of course, once the drag race gets going, Alex accidentally hits one of the flame cans they set up to mark the lanes and swerves into the
brother.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, into the crowd watching. He swerves into the crowd. He hits one of the cans, swerves into the crowd.
And
everybody runs away except for the young kid in the wheelchair
and
who he just fucking
hits.
And is killed instantly.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, dude, did we really have to go there?
It's just so fucking awful. It's just, no, Johnny, don't shoot him, Johnny. He gets really angry that he killed,
Yeah, he's like, it's all my fault. So he pulls his gun out and he's going to kill himself. And it's like, well, yeah, pretty much was, bro. And he gives the diary back.
I took it from you earlier. I just want to let you know that I did this.
Yeah, and somehow she's not pissed. And he's just like, oh, yeah, you know, this is for my younger brother. He was kind of in love with you. Your younger brother and you? What?
No. There's yet another kiss, and they want to go to a cabin in the woods where they can be together.
Oh, because his little brother read that from her diary
From her diary.
And it's like, oh, yes, you want to do the thing that I want to do that you read in my stolen diary. And he tells Natasha to tell Tracy Lord's character, Blanche, to use the money I was saving for an auto shop for a funeral.
Yeah, for
she
a funeral.
Says, I will. Like, that's just dark.
Well,
and
don't
sad.
You need to... Also, it's... How much did you save up? How much does a funeral cost, and how much would it cost to put together a... Anyway, it's just... You could take some of that for your business.
It's just, you know, star-crossed lovers and a little boy dies.
There's saxophone music in this movie that is so fucking on the nose that I had trouble getting in and out of it. That kind of brought me out of the movie. The music kind of fucking seems so on the... So belligerent of all the fucking... Anyway, but... I can't... There's a detective... That, you know, goes after them and tries to... Anyway, but, yeah, at the end, there's a beautiful shot of his body just laying there and the fucking lights just blinking at this dead body in this wheelchair. It's one of the saddest and most fucked up endings I've seen. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, I know.
At the
Alex
beginning of this movie.
Yeah, and Alex was a douchebag, but now he has to, like, live with accidentally murdering a child.
Yeah, well... Anyway,
life sucks.
but yeah, that's basically the movie. That was awesome. That was the I wrote down beautiful shot of the dead handicap. That was great. No, and the third movie for this episode is something even more disturbing, or not disturbing anyway. Not disturbing.
Reform School Girl.
This came out in September of 1994. Here are some of the movies. A Simple Twist of Fate with Steve Martin and a child. Killer Looks with a person who looks like Tracy Lords. Men of War with Dolph Lundgren. A Good Man in Africa with Sean Connery. Yeah, that makes sense. Sean Connery. And John Lithgow. Both good men in Africa. Swimming with Sharks also came out this month. Hoop Dreams, Time Cop, Cyber Tracker. That's a great movie. Cyber Tracker. Quiz Show, fucking Nostradamus with John Malkovich. came out, which is an insane fucking idea for a movie. Puppet Master 5, Criminal Passion, Only You, Terminal Velocity. My God, Terminal. Ed Wood came out this month. And, oh God, fucking Jason's Lyric. Oh God, some of these movies I've never heard of in my entire life. The Scout with Brendan Fraser and Albert Brooks. Lady Bird, Lady Bird with what looks to be Javier Bardem. And, oh God, a documentary of Forrest Gump came out in October 1st of 1994, the documentary of Forrest Gump. If you wanted to see how Forrest Gump became Forrest Gump, watch the documentary of Through the Eyes of Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I'm good.
No, I don't need... He's made up. I don't need to see a documentary about how... All right. Reform School Girls. Reform School Girl. My gosh.
Starring Matt LeBlanc, same year Friends premiere.
Yes!
He's 27.
In the same month.
Yeah.
I was happy to see him play a fucking douchebag, a real fucking asshole.
Oh, yeah.
It's not something I have, you know, he's been typecast as like, hey, babe, hey, how you doing? Yeah. But, and it doesn't okay. really, and it was good to see him turn to be a real fucking prick. Anyway. Oh, shit.
This one actually, it's named after a 50s movie, but this one actually is a remake.
Yeah, it is a remake. I don't think I've seen it. When I looked it up, I did see it was a legit remake. It stars some really awesome, Marissa Ribisi is in this, which is nice. Yeah, this is a really awesome and really disturbing movie about being stuck in a place you don't ever want to go to after being, after being more or less framed or put in a bad situation where they're blaming you. Anyway, I already realized the opening first few seconds of this movie, they're already dubbing some of those lines.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if you noticed that or not, but all right. So she comes from it's a rough home life there. That's pretty.
Yeah. The teenage girl Donna, she's getting ready to. She's just getting ready. She's gonna go out on a double date, I believe it is.
And her uncle Charlie is a lecherous, ugly, fucking disgusting piece of shit.
He doesn't want her to go out because. "Quote unquote, they could have a good time together."
Ugh,
gross.
Fuck. Tummy.
Oh yeah, the commercial on TV was saying something about like your belly buddy in a bottle.
When he gets hit, but yeah, all right.
Yeah, that's random. Yeah, so Matt LeBlanc shows up, fucks up, the gross uncle. So okay, that's a plus.
Congratulations, you're very woke right now.
Yeah.
Let's see how well you do in the next hour and a half. But all right. But he kicks Charlie one more time, really, so it really, really fucking hurts. And you think that, hey, he is a good dude. He is a wonderful, fantastic, I like him a lot. And he's going to be with this, he's quote-unquote her hero for this small amount of time. So, anyway. And he kind of comforts her and says, trust me. I can be trusted. I hurt your uncle, so please touch my body. That's the whole vibe of his fucking attitude right there. But I'm gonna trust Matt LeBlanc. But fine. He takes the car. Yeah. Anyway. So.
Yeah. So his character's name is Vince. Vince, Donna, and two other teenagers. They're just going for a joyride. Vince talks about how he wants to crash some Bel Air party so they could get a load of us. So there's some more class stuff in here.
Yeah, they'll know how cool we are. And eventually he kicks out the other fucking... you don't want to go to Richville? Let's go to Richville and show them what's what. We know how to cool and be a party. You don't want to go to the drive-in.
I kind of want to go to the drive-in. I want to go to the party.
Oh, listen, she wants to go to the party. She doesn't want to go to the drive-in.
It's that, a lot of that, that's the conversation in the car. Pretty and much. It's very repetitive.
It's like, drive-in. Oh, let's go to the private party. Whatever. So there's a private party at Griffith Park. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so he kicks the two of them out for not wanting to go party crashing, drops him on the roadside.
Yeah.
Oh, and she has a little sister, and, you know, once the uncle gets beat up, it's like, okay, but man, you're just going to leave
your sister there. And that is paid off as well, because she is often, she's worried about a little bit later on in the movie about, like, whether or not the uncle's going to, you know, try and, you know, have sex with her little younger niece as well. And that's why she was against it. She didn't want him creeping on her younger sister as well. That's fucking, yeah. Anyway.
Okay, and then as they're, you know, he's just driving. I guess they're on their way to Bel Air. Vince says, you know, chicks like a nice fast car. I ain't about to make that 9-to-5 scene just to have a cool car. Faster to steal them and more kicks.
Easier to just take the car, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the kind of hood he is.
He's a hood.
Yeah.
Well, I love that phrase.
He gotta get his kicks by stealing cars.
That's what hoods do. They get their kicks.
So, yeah, he's fucking around being a hotshot, and he runs down some rando just coming home from the grocery store with their groceries.
Yeah, running over. That's
fucking. And then he just bails.
He's just like, well, all right.
Not my car. Fuck this mess.
She runs, too, but she's not as lucky.
Not as fast, yeah.
Not as fast. And then she's in the courtroom now, and she has to...
And the uncle blabs about some guy roughing him up. And his friend said that his friend that he kicked out of the car said they met that night at a pool hall and took a ride with him because the car looked cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get into a car and take a joyride with anyone if their car looks cool enough.
Oh my gosh, look at that cool car.
Yeah, so Donna's the only one on trial for manslaughter, possession of stolen property, and a few other things.
You would think that they would have, you know, investigated more to find the accomplice or the fucking dude who actually fucking was driving the goddamn car, but okay, whatever.
It's fine, like,
whatever.
No, we'll just take this chick, and she's sentenced to, dun-dun-dun, reform school.
Oh no, where all the girls are bad.
So Donna is with some other chicks in the paddy wagon,
yeah.
And the other chick says, well, you know, how bad can it be, right? Cut straight to hosing them down with cold water and a guard saying, spread them. That's
how rough it can be in the 1950s. But, yeah, it's really, really rough.
Oh, and I like this bit where she is, she's with the reform school psychologist. For the psyche eval, and he's giving her, like, not quite a Rorschach test, but just one of those, picture tests where they just show you, like, black pictures.
Yeah.
And, it's, you know, a house, some people, and, you know, a mom, a dad, a kid, and she's like, what do you see? She's like, well, a family. And he's like, well, what about the dog? And he's like, oh, I didn't see her. And he says, well, what makes you think the dog is a she? And she says... Because it doesn't have a penis.
I can't see the penis.
And he writes, can't see penis. So how did that eval turn out? Supposed to mean?
You can trust me. I am your friend. Talks about animal genitals.
I'm pretty sure that line was not in the 1950s version of this film.
No, animal. Yeah. So... The first thing I wrote... one of the things I wrote down here is that light blue is the new black. As far as that goes, because they're all wearing light blue, you know, get-ups. Look who's speaking like a 1950s person now. Get-ups.
So we get a vibe for this reform school. You know, one of the guards is walking around. You know, some of the girls start fighting.
Yeah.
And the guard says, you know, if you're gonna kill each other, do it on someone else's shift. When one of my girls gets hurt, the paper takes hours, and the state don't pay no overtime. So this is who's watching these kids. Makes us feel better about that. One of the girls is in for possession of marijuana. Yeah, they're in nutrition class.
Nutrition.
I love how it's not quite the food pyramid yet, but how their nutrition is supposed to contain of 68% meat, 27% dairy, and 7% fruit.
Oof.
That is very 50s, and teacher says it's important because you're building the families that hold off the communist hordes.
And they're wanting her to be, they want them to be homemakers, to be like really, like, ooh, we're going to teach you to be what you should be, at home, cleaning bullshit you don't want to, you know, doing stuff, acting subservient. We find this out later that he's a creep. We already kind of think he's a creepy fucking teacher.
Ted, the psychiatrist, he comes off as a creep. So she goes in for another session, and he starts talking about personal stuff, and he starts kind of feeling up on her a little bit, and he's like, you know, unless a little public exhibitionism would make you feel better. Yeah. But, you know, she just says, go fuck yourself, Ted. So
yeah.
She's standing up for herself.
Yeah. Eventually, there's the food fight, and
Of course, the psych guy, he's a total perv, and he reports her as a nympho. So I didn't do it. She's a nymphomaniac.
She's a nymphomaniac. I'm a good person. You're not. I'm not a sick pervert. Yeah, and she's not a nympho.
Just a regular.
She's just a regular human.
Who got caught up in, you know, with the wrong crowd.
Anyway, but I really like the food fight scene because she actually, she takes the brunt of it, and she, after, you know, it's a nice, wonderful scene.
Yeah, it's my fault.
Even though it really, you know, wasn't, but,
she doesn't want everyone to be mad at her, so she's like, yeah, I'll just take the
This is a way to get in, or to, you know, not be hounded on as a bad person or whatever the fuck, but, you know.
Oh, and then we cut to a point where we see that, Vince, Matt LeBlanc's character, is following her 12-year-old sister.
Yeah, that was like, fucking rough.
Oh,
God,
oh, no, what's gonna happen here?
That was rough to watch. I was a little worried there. I didn't want to.
Yeah, that was concerning.
Anyway, there are a couple of things that happens while she's in there. She finds out that maybe she can get out early enough does certain things. Oh, yeah.
Well, the headmistress of the reform school, I don't know if that's her title, but she has a 1938 relay race Olympic gold medal.
The one that happened when they were in Germany during Nazi time. Fantastic. Yes.
And so she's still holding on to that as the main achievement in her life. I mean, I would too if I had a gold medal. And she's obsessed with getting the prison girls to win races against other schools and offers early releases for good performances.
Yes, exactly.
So Donna kind of sees this as an opportunity.
Which goes on her head.
Sure you would.
Ding.
Oh, I love how there's this other scene where some of the reform school girls are just sitting around chatting. And
group chat, yeah.
Yeah, and they're reading, you know, some teen girl magazine about, you know, winning one of the girls says, oh, I could win a dream date with Elvis. Wouldn't that be the best? And then another one of the girls says, my dream date would be with Sal Mineo. He suffered. I can see it in his eyes. Another girl says, yeah, 5 minutes he'd try to get you in the back seat. And she said, oh, I'd give it to him willingly. And it's like, well, honey, no, he wouldn't because you're just not his type.
Yeah, he's, for those of you who do not know, he is gay. Or he was. Was. He's not, I mean, he's probably, in heaven or a ghost. And if he's in heaven or a ghost, he's still probably gay. But enough about Sal Mineo's sexual orientation. There's a plumbing contract, he tries to get, there's a plumbing contract to get involved here. I just wrote down plumbing contract. Why did I do that?
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I don't know either. Anyway, so Matt is kissing another young lady. He's you know, being a fucking disgusting. You don't want...
And we find that he's using the younger sister as an insurance policy against her not testifying.
I was worried he was going to touch. I wasn't really worried.
No, he just kind of took her out to the fair, and they went into one of those photo booths so that he could show her the photos and be like, yeah, I know how to get to your sister.
And see if she's going to keep her, wants to see if she's going to keep her trap shut about
exactly.
Because
he visits her and says, are you going to be quiet about what happened, dickhead? Yeah, because I have your sister.
Yeah, look at this. Here's the proof. Yeah. And she's like, oh, fuck. I guess I better keep my trap shut.
Yeah. And, anyway, so...
So yeah. Donna and one of the more rebellious girls in the reform school, the one who, you know, was mad at her during the food fight scene mm-hmm. type thing, but they are actually starting to grow closer.
Oh my.
Very close.
Yeah,
so close.
As a possible lesbian experience.
We see the lesbian experience. There's a full-on lesbian scene.
Lesbian experience.
I also imagine was not in the 1950s version.
I mean, no, I don't know. No, it probably wasn't in the 1950s version, but it was interesting.
There's a fight during the shower,
which is necessary for these kinds of movies. You have to have a shower fight.
Yeah, because otherwise, what are we doing in the shower other than cleaning ourselves? But Dink is going to be leaving for the penitentiary since she fucking leaves. It feels like there's a burgeoning romance between Donna and her newfound...
and her new, maybe, girlfriend.
Crush, yeah, girlfriend.
Yeah, she agrees to let her use her phone time since they only get so much phone time per week. Lets her use her phone time since she doesn't have anyone to call because she has no family, which is sad.
Yeah.
Lets Donna call her sister to tell her where her box money is. We see in the very beginning, she's saving money in a box to try and get away from Gross Uncle Charlie to tell her where the box money is so that she can get, it's behind the mirror, so she can get away from the perv uncle and Matt LeBlanc. Now there's two bad guys
fucking
that the poor little sister has to try and get away
from.
Yeah,
exactly. And there's a confrontation with the headmistress, and then...
She gives them shit for... quote-unquote, unusual sexual practices.
Unusual sexual practices.
Yes, mouth-kissing, embracing as girls.
Wow.
It's like...
Fuck off.
I know, it's like, big fucking deal, but she's like, this is what happens when you put the lion in with the lamb.
That's
oy
not
vey, come
fuck
on,
off,
sister.
You fucking dumbass bullshit. They're just people connecting with each other, you fucking fuckers. Calm down. Anyway, she sprays her uncle... With the fucking spray shit.
I thought the younger sister. What, with hairspray?
With the spray. I thought that. Or am I making that up?
No. I might have just missed it.
Yeah, she sprays her uncle.
Once she gets the money.
Yeah, and then heads to Kansas.
Oh yeah, so she does find the money, and yeah, she what does she light him on fire?
She sprays him with the. The fucking, why did I say bug spray? Mace, like shit like that.
I didn't realize they had mace at that time.
She sprayed it with fucking something.
Yeah, and runs away to get a train to Kansas. I'm not sure what's in Kansas. That might be where the reform school is.
Yeah, but they don't make that entirely clear.
So there's a big meet with a big track meet with some rich school, and the headmistress is trying to give Donna, you know, a bit of a break after getting her shit about, you know, her unusual sexual practices.
Yes.
And she just says, you know, you want to protect everyone. That's why you're here in the first place, because you don't think enough of yourself. Just wait until the meet tomorrow. Apparently, Donna has been doing really well at all the practices.
Yes.
Because she's like, I have to get the fuck out of here to save my sister.
You need wealth and privilege to succeed in this fucking reform school, don't we? No.
That's what she says. Oh, once they get to the, you know, the really ritzy school that the headmistress has got, like, a really firm, you know, she's really determined to beat this, you know, ritzy school.
Yeah.
Ooh. And she says, you know, you need to prove to the world you don't need wealth and privilege to succeed. You represent the teamwork and discipline that McCarthyism is all about.
That's not, you know, you shouldn't be referencing.
That's what the name of the school is. The McCarthy School for Wayward Girls.
That's what he did with all of his girls.
It's like, oh, shit. No. Okay, I didn't realize that was the name of the school until this point. Oi. Jesus. Talk about, you know, hitting the nail on the head.
Yeah, really, really on the nose there. Okay, dear... Oh, I just
this running sequence is very, very long. It didn't need to be so long.
No, they need to cut that. They need to cut
this. It's relay, and, you know, of course, Donna kicks ass at the race to this, like, totally, like, bullshit Thelonious Monk Bebop nonsense.
Sound a little bit like parts of Stan Kenton and parts of, like, some very, yeah, some very strange.
Because that type, there is some Bebop that was 53, that fucking Miles Davis's kind of blue, which was Bebop, was 53, but it seems even more fusion, it seems even further away, it feels like late 60s jazz fusion, rather than, there's a little bit of late 60s jazz fusion in there, but
it didn't really, they could have cut this.
There was a lot of racing, a lot of watching Donna run in her tracksuit, or her tank top she was wearing. So after she wins the race, Donna is doing kitchen work with her girlfriend, and she gets a photo in the mail of her sister, who got to Kansas free and clear, so we know that the sister is fine.
Yeah.
And then the movie ends with that thing where they tell you how all the characters turned out.
And I thought there was going to be no resolution for the Matt LeBlanc character, but there is, and, yeah.
Yeah, so basically they all either turn out super successful despite their circumstances, or all fucked up because they were always shitty.
Wow.
What a thing to think.
Yes.
Holy shit.
Nobody's just normal. Everybody's either a...
awful human being, or...
either, yeah, went to jail for the rest of their life, or they're, you know... a successful politician. It's like there's not really much in between the two.
Super black. There wasn't a lot of gray in there, especially what they were trying to do. Anyway, this has been Top Notch Nonsense. I've been Michael Benson.
And I'm Miranda Mobley.
Okay, bye-bye.